Call the Committee on Energy, Finance, and Policy to order. The quorum is present. First order of business is, other than the clerk taking the roll, the approval of the minutes from February 14th. Representative Johnson moves approval of the minutes. Members, are there any additions or corrections? Being none, those in favor of approval signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. Members, we have a couple of adjustments to make from the last meeting regarding referrals. The first would be to reconsider the motion, or the chair will move to reconsider the motion by which House File 446 was recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Local Government because it has to go back through finance. First of all, we need to act on the motion to bring that bill, which is still in possession of the committee, back before us. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The bill is before us, and members, then the motion is that House File 446 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is re-referred. The next motion would be to reconsider, and the chair will move to reconsider the motion by which House File 472 was recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. The reason for that motion, members, is that we overlooked that the bill had been referred to this division by finance. We had the impression that it was a direct referral, but it was not. So we need to bring that bill back before us, which is what this motion would accomplish. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is before us, and the chair will move that House File 472 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommendation to place on the consent calendar if there is no objection. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is re-referred. And now, to get on to the business of the day, Representative Welty, House File 295.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty. First of all, there should be an amendment that can be passed out, and it's the 0295DE2 amendment. And once it's passed out and members have had a chance to look at it, I would move that we adopt the 295DE2 amendment. But first of all, I'll describe what that amendment is.
Dr. Welty, the first thing you want to do is move your bill.
That's true, too. Chairman Hilty, I'll move House File 295 and recommend it be laid over for possible inclusion in an energy bill.
Thank you. We do have the amendment, Representative Welty, if you want to describe the amendment.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty. And to members of the committee, House File 295 is a bill that's been in the works for over 2 years. In the beginning, the actual bill that you see before you, 295, was put together. It's a shell of an employee energy incentive program. And this idea came to me because I knew that IBM had a program in place over the years And that program has led to thousands of dollars of cost savings, and I thought that we could come up with a similar type of program for state government. And what the DE2 amendment is a new version, and it came about because Dave Fielding with the Department of Administration, who's sitting next to me, came on board recently, and he's been working with the Department of Administration. Last year, working with the members of the Department of Administration, we came up with House File 295 and had consensus on that. But Dave comes from the private sector and has had experience with employee incentive programs, and so we've drafted 295 to kind of take into consideration his thoughts. And also, I was able to receive additional information on the IBM program, and seeing how successful that was, I wanted to leave room to incorporate possibly some ideas of the IBM program or possibly the software that IBM has, but not limiting it to that. So what Subdivision 1 does is it gives the Commissioner of Administration the ability to put into place the best practices methods of implementing an employee incentive program. And we want to limit it specifically to energy at this point in time, but I really believe by looking at the models that this could be an advancement for all of state government, and it could actually incorporate more than just energy. But at this time, I think we should just focus on energy and incorporate a successful program there. What it does is it puts in place a program that would provide incentive payments. And if I could break this down in simple terms, what we would do is over a year's period of time, if some employee came up with a program that leads to cost savings, when you look at the energy savings over a year, that employee would be eligible for 50% of the year's savings. But we wanted to cap that at, or I decided to cap that at $1,000 per year. And how I came to that conclusion was, in the beginning, I left it open-ended and just said you could receive 50% of the cost savings. While working with Department of Administration, one of the first times they came into my office, they said, you know, Representative Welty, how much do you want to spend on this program? And I said, well, you know, this program isn't going to require new money because the cost savings has to come from that agency's budget. You factor the cost savings and you take 50% of that cost savings from that budget, so it doesn't mean that we put any new money into that agency. But they said, well, Representative Welty, this is actually, you know, we made one modification at a large building and it resulted in thousands of dollars of savings in a day. And so I looked at them and I said, oh, okay, I was guessing that we're going to be looking at $20,000 to $30,000 of savings, you know, from a building over a year's period of time, but that's not necessarily the case. This could lead to substantial cost savings for state government. Now, so that's why I capped it at the 1,000. I am open to taking your opinions on that. If you think that we should increase that amount, make the incentive even a little bit greater, I'm open to that. How we're going to fund this, I described this a little bit when talking about the, you know, possible savings that we could see. We want to fund this through the what we currently call the General Services Revolving Fund. And as I've been told, this fund is actually where the Department of Administration takes dollars and then they designate that out to the agencies to pay for their energy bills. And so what will happen is they will calculate the energy cost savings to a building or to an agency. And then the Department of Administration will, number one, after an incentive idea has been implemented, they will pay the make the incentive payment to the employee from that fund. And also, if the Department of Administration has costs related to administrating this program and also the implementation of the program, they will be able to take the dollars out of that fund as well. So we're not looking for new money, and we're looking really to save state government dollars with this legislation. What we're asking is the Department of Administration to come back with a report to the chairs of the Senate and the House committees with jurisdiction over energy next January to talk about the actual program that they're going to implement. And second, after that, every year we'd like to have an update on how successful the program has been, what cost savings have we benefited from within the state. And I just want to quickly run through a real-life example of an employee Energy Incentive Program, and actually this is a little bit broader than that. IBM has a program, a suggestions award program, and they've had it for decades. But in 2005, they revamped the program and they renamed it ThinkPlace. And ThinkPlace is set up, it's an electronic format, and employees from all across the world can weigh in. They can present ideas on cost savings, or they can present ideas on how they believe IBM can increase their bottom lines through some sort of new way to generate revenue. All employees can post an idea. Then the suggestions are routed to the executives. The employees receive feedback of whether or not those ideas can be implemented. If they are implemented, the employee gets a percentage of the cost savings. And anybody, the great thing about this is anyone from around the world and on any level can weigh in on an idea that's been put before them. So you have feedback from all over. People can describe how they believe that it can be implemented and offer ideas or suggestions, or they can say that the idea doesn't have merit. There's a senior review board that IBM's put in place, and the corporation of, it's called the Corporation Innovation Council, and they track the ideas, they analyze the revenue, the cost savings, and the productivity. And finally, there's an audit process, and everything is documented. Now, just talking to the individual who's kind of in charge of this and who talked to me about this, she had mentioned that over 10,000 ideas have been generated since 2005, and out of those 10,000 ideas, 150 of those have been implemented. And I asked her about the cost savings or the revenue generated, and she said, to put it conservatively, the estimates show that several $100 million in cost savings have been reached. So I look at this idea, we're starting very small and very narrow with just energy. But I believe in the future we could be expanding this across all of state government, and I really believe that, number one, government can learn from the private sector. Number two, that private sector can learn from government, and we should be sharing ideas that can work. And I really believe this idea can work, and I'm hoping that we can give the Department of Administration the ability to move forward and implement an incentive program in the state government. So with that, I will turn it over to Dave Fielding if he would also like to offer some background on the incentive program.
Thank you very much, Chairman Hilde and representatives. I don't know that I can bring much to this specific...
Mr. Fielding, before you proceed, would you please identify yourself?
I'm sorry. Dave Fielding. I'm the Director of Plant Management in the Department of Administration. My experience with incentive programs goes back to many years in the airline business, and I think it should come as no surprise that that industry was looking constantly for ways to save money. And they were successful, but they also had enormous problems with implementation, because as good as programs like this can appear, the devil, as it is in the details. And I think the reason is what Representative Weldy has pointed out, the reason that IBM has been successful is they have found a way to take a very, very cumbersome process for a worldwide organization and transform it through their unique capability of software and hardware into something that can be managed. And we want to learn as much as we can from them. I would also point out that it's taken them a number of years to get where they are. And I think we have to be very mindful of that and be very cautious as we proceed in evaluating their program, other programs which do exist in other state governments. We've determined at least that the state of Washington and the state of Arkansas currently have similar programs, and there may well be others. So our purpose in partnering here is to make sure that we learn as much as we can about those existing programs and that we develop a program that can work efficiently and effectively. I think it's important for the committee also to understand that we aren't starting necessarily from ground zero. When the governor came out with the executive order roughly a year ago relating to energy conservation, the Department of Administration took a number of initiatives at that time. There is a website which was brought up and is still active, www.savingenergy.state.mn.us, And that provides suggestions. It provides an opportunity for employees to provide their input and recommendations. But I think what's being proposed here is a very logical next step, which takes the interest level which has been created over the last year and turns it into a program that has some real teeth. So we look forward to working with Representative Weldy in trying to fashion Minnesota's employee incentive program. Thank you.
Representative Weldy, it seems to me that a critical word in your amendment is on line 15. We talked about documented cost savings. I'm presuming that what's intended here is that it would only be, like, since we're talking about cost savings on an annual basis, it would only be after the year had transpired, and the cost savings were calculated at that point, that any award would be made. Is that correct?
That's what I would foresee, but if you know, the Department of Administration could calculate the cost savings for the year and in some sort of formula that they come up with, they could do that. And if they could justify it, they could move forward with that.
Representative Gunther?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Welty, I think this is a great idea. I think it enhances the conservation enhancement program. But the question that first came to my mind, because I look at gray areas being a retail grocer, could somebody simply call and ask for an energy audit on a building and use that as the suggestion that measurably saved money for that state building? Or do we have to do more than that in order to get the money?
Representative Weld.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty and Representative Gunther. To answer that, what we have put in line 1.6 is that it says that, number one, you must implement a program using best practices, and the Commissioner of Administration must develop the policies.
Okay.
And so we're leaving it open for them to come up with that, because in my original bill, if you look at House File 295, there's actually a section where, number one, we said if it's under the governor's list, you couldn't turn in that idea and then get the incentive for that. And so we want them to come up with that criteria that makes sense when they put together the program. The other thing is we limit it to twice. You couldn't take advantage of this program more than twice during the time you were employed by the state.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I see a testifier. Have all state-owned buildings or state-run buildings been energy audited from the Department of Administration already?
Mr. Peely?
Chairman? Representative, the audits are underway, and many and most of the largest buildings have been completed, but it is not complete at this time. That is an ongoing process.
So we're fairly close, then, is what you're saying?
You know, to be honest with you, I have to plead that I don't know the answer. I've only been in the position for about 4 months, so I can't testify as to the specific buildings, but I do know that there's a full slate of audits set up for calendar year 2007.
Yes. Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a great idea. I think we had an energy audit in our grocery stores, and boy, did it show results, and I really appreciate this thing. I think the Conservation Enhancement Program is as viable today as it was when it was first started, and I think I really applaud this bill. I think it's a great start.
Representative Weldy.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty. And to get back to your point on that, you know, I think that the audits do show tremendous results, and you're able to implement ideas. One other thing that we took into consideration that we didn't outline in here, but was in the consideration in the original bill, was if you move forward and you find out that it's going to cost you more in the beginning to implement a cost savings idea, because there may be somewhere you have to buy a switch or you have to put in new wiring, whatever it may be, we're not holding the state government to that, to implementing it. We're saying you may. And I think that that's another thing that they can take into consideration in putting together their practices or their actually their policies under this program. And to go, just I want to make one other point. I remember I was this is probably about 15 years ago, and I remember hearing about this program, and the example that they gave at the time was this. Somebody turned in an idea and said we could turn off all of the lights in the pop machines in our complex and save money. And they ended up doing that. They were able to calculate the cost savings on it. So it's not just what you'd probably find in a normal audit. These could be creative ideas. And one thing I know, some in state agencies may not want me to bring up this example, but all of us look out at that transportation building at night. And we see it lit up. And maybe there's an employee in the transportation building that has come up with an idea of how they can somehow rework who works where at night so that they can turn off 7 floors of lights instead of leaving the whole building lit up. So I think that this can also bring forward some pretty creative suggestions that can lead to energy conservation.
Representative Saylor.
I just wanted, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to return a little bit to Representative Gunther's point in asking Mr. Fielding, could we have a list of those buildings that are up for audit? I just think it might be of interest to a number of us. I know I would personally like to see the list of who's up for audit and when they're scheduled. Thank you.
Mr. Fielding?
Yes, Representative Saylor will certainly do that.
Representative Galen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Welty. I think it's also a fantastic bill, and one of the things that that I've learned in my design education is the importance of ownership of the folks who are operating and using the buildings. And I think we'll see a variety of ways to do that as the policy deadline approaches here. But one question I have for you is ideally, that sense of ownership comes from being a state employee, a sense of public service and desire from talking to state employees, that sense of service is there. I think it's a great idea to provide a little bit of incentive to get out there, but I want to make sure that you don't intend this to apply to folks sitting in these chairs, that legislators as state employees are not eligible for these rebates, for these payments. Is that correct?
Well, we actually discussed this. Chairman Hilton, Representative Galen. We discussed this, and that's why it does say state agencies. And so really at this point in time, our intention is that it's more limited to the executive branch and is just overall the state agencies. So the legislature is not at this time included in this. That's not our intent, although I have heard many suggestions that have come forward just among legislators about how we can end up creating cost savings, and maybe those legislators can turn those ideas over to their LAs and others so that they can turn in the ideas. I don't know. So I guess that's something that can be flushed out. But at this time, we do not intend for it to be open to legislators.
Representative Welty, it is our intention to hold this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus energy finance bill. And there may be a couple of things that you want to consider about language here before we get to that point. And just to come back to my initial question, it occurs to me about the documentation of cost savings. I don't know if the language here covers every contingency or not, but as the question was raised, I think, by Representative Gunther, or perhaps in your own comments, it's conceivable that a savings suggestion because of an initial investment that would be required might not be realized for 2 or 3 years or more. Are you comfortable that the language that you have in the delete all would cover such a contingency?
I am, because Chairman Hilty, I am very comfortable with it, because we do state in here that, I'm trying to find the language, at some point it says may. And I'm just not finding it right now, but Chairman Hilty, I will be willing to make changes to this if necessary in the language when it is included in that final bill to incorporate any suggestions that you may have or other members may have in order to make this legislation better. But our intent is that they may implement an idea if they decide that it needs to go forward. But we're not holding their feet to the fire and saying that they must, because it could cost money to implement.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And following up on your question and also Representative Gunther's, I would encourage you, Representative Welty, and we can talk about this after committee, outside of committee, a little bit about how to do this, but in Subdivision 3, the report to the legislature, mm-hmm. to perhaps also just include a comprehensive appendix of all suggestions. So maybe they're not, you know, payback in 1 or 2 years, but maybe there's a 7 or 10 year payback, but, you know, this is a great germinator of ideas for future energy committees to be looking at.
So noted, Representative Kalin and Representative Hilton.
A representative, seeing no more discussion. Representative Osmond.
Sure, I just have one question, and maybe it's more of counsel. When we're looking at page 1, line 9, at the end of that line, it says, to save by agencies in the following fiscal year. I'm wondering if that really ties us down to a year that may or may not follow full implementation of the act. I'm wondering if we should change the V to an A, so it says the cash awards must be amount equal to half the amount saved by agencies in a following fiscal year, or as a result, or how would we make sure that that's included, that we're not limiting it to a specific year that may not be fully implemented, and we would only see a partial savings in that next fiscal year.
Representative Welty, to that point.
Well, we were just discussing, Chairman Hilty, we were just discussing this up here, and I guess I'll just defer it to Mr. Fielding. He had a suggestion on this, and then Mr. Eliff, if there's language that you can come up with that works, I'd be happy to take Representative Osmond's amendment to this.
Just my suggestion. Okay.
Mr. Fielding?
Chairman, I think that if I understand the committee concerns, it may be that this needs to read saved by agencies in the first full year following implementation of the suggestion, or word to that effect. I think that's what you're after.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry I don't have any specific language to offer, but I think it is our intent that it would be after this has actually been implemented, and the language as I'm reading it ties us down to a specific year regardless of the implementation. So that's the only concern I have.
Well, I think it's a point well taken, Representative Osmond. Mr. Eloff, can you suggest a remedy to the conundrum?
Maybe not right now, Mr. Chair. you're going to have savings accruing, well, once fully implemented, into the future for a certain amount of time. I don't think you want to get too complex in terms of talking about payback periods and things like that. I think we can work this out.
Okay. Representative Welty.
Chairman Hilty, I will take the suggestion from Representative Osmond into consideration. Definitely I'll work with Mr. Eliff to make that change, and we will come back with something that will work. Representative Osmond, thanks for that suggestion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Welty is young enough that he'll be able to work this out. Got lots of energy to deal with this.
Any further discussion, members? Representative Welty then moves the DE2, moves adoption of the DE2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted, and Representative Welty, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion, and we'll be working with you on these minor repairs in the meantime.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairman.
Very much.
And thank you, members.
Representative Scalzi, House File 393. The chair will move House File 393 to be before us and to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Energy Finance Bill. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I also have an author's amendment in your package, the A1 amendment. I think what I'd probably do is speak to the bill and then speak to the amendment. Would that be appropriate, Chair Hilty?
As you wish.
House File 393 is a bill for a geothermal heat pump study. It's a study related to conservation to determine how it might affect the energy savings in the state of Minnesota and also the economy of the state of Minnesota. This is a tested technology in limited use that uses the temperature of the ground, approximately 55 degrees, as a starting point for heating and cooling. And this study will be a comprehensive technical, economic, and environmental analysis of what this means for the state of Minnesota and greater usage of these systems so that we can all save energy. Some of the data is available, but this study will identify some of the barriers to greater uses of the system and how the state can help overcome these barriers to increase uses for businesses, homes, institutions, etc. And I have today with me a couple of people who are familiar with these systems. First of all, I have Bob Donnelly here with me. He's the sales supervisor of Econar, which is a Minnesota company that manufactures these systems. And he can tell us a little bit about what his business is. He has a factory in Appleton, and I think that he can give us some information regarding this.
Mr. Donnelly, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair and representatives. I am with Econar Energy Systems, and we are a Minnesota manufacturing company. Our corporate office is in Elk River, Minnesota, and our manufacturing facility is in Appleton, Minnesota.
And could you please identify yourself?
Okay. Bob Donnelly, sales supervisor, Econar Energy Systems. And a little bit more about Econar. We've been manufacturing geothermal heat pumps in Minnesota for 20 years. And we sell throughout the United States and into Asia and the European market as well. I'd like to just give a little brief background about the geothermal industry. Again, Econar has been in business 20 years. However, it's only been in the last maybe 3 to 4 years where the industry is becoming more widespread and more known. And it's becoming, a choice for many businesses and homes today. Once people become aware of the technology and its economic benefits and how it can be used. And in thinking about the bill here, I would strongly encourage you to move it forward. I think it's item number 6 that I would direct you toward as the real benefit of the bill. And that refers to the identifying the barriers to widespread adoption of geothermal heat pump systems and making suggestions to overcome those barriers. There are definite barriers to promoting this industry. It's a very small industry. Econar has about 50 employees as a reference point. Even the largest manufacturer in the U.S. employs about 300 employees. So it's a very small industry, but growing. If you want to develop this industry and take advantage of the technology to grow it faster, then we need some help to overcome those barriers. Generally, consumer awareness is a barrier. To have properly trained installers of our systems, to have an association in Minnesota that would coordinate all the interests in developing that industry, the geothermal industry, and to encourage the Public Utilities Commission to work with the power companies to look at class cost of service study to develop a geothermal rate in Minnesota. Right now, our rate is the same as any electric rate. Because of its efficiencies, our systems should be able to cost justify a lower rate. And so those are some background issues that I'd like to address. So I'd be open for any questions.
Mr. Donnelly, could you expand a little bit on the rate issue?
Right. My background before Econr was I worked for Minnegasco in the rate department, so I'm familiar with class cost of service studies to develop rates for the Public Utility Commission, cost-justified rates. To develop rates, typically you will have cost-justified. You need to go through cost justification to develop rate categories. The geothermal heat pump should be able to qualify for a reduced rate because of its efficiencies in this class cost of service study. Right now, the industry is so small, the power companies really aren't even interested in looking at a rate because there's just the industry isn't developed enough yet. But if the Public Utilities Commission could encourage the power companies to look at a geothermal rate or something like that, that would go a long ways for developing the industry. It would all be cost-based as well, so it would be appropriate.
Thank you. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Donnelly, are you talking about the Conservation Enhancement Program for natural gas appliances gives the person who buys those appliances a reduced cost of those appliances? Are you saying that geothermal should also get those kind of rates?
Mr. Donnelly.
Chairman, Representative, I'm talking more to the actual rate structure and not rebates. Those would be conservation rebates that both natural gas and electric companies give out through the conservation programs that the state requires of them. That's a good direction as well, but I think the industry itself could stand alone on a cost-justified rate through a general rate structure. That would not be a rebate, but actually billing rate.
Representative Gunther?
So what you're saying, that even though it costs less, takes less gas to heat a house, that they give you a low rate?
This is an all-electric system. There's no natural
all
gas.
Electric, okay.
Right. This is a geothermal heat pump is an all-electric system, uses refrigeration technology. There's no natural gas in our product at all.
It's just electricity.
Correct. Electricity, right.
Great idea.
Representative Beard.
Along that line of questioning, Mr. Chair, Mr. Donnelly, I'm familiar that large industrial users usually get a lower rate classification. So am I assuming, or can we safely assume, that these use large amounts of electrical power then? Would it be, if a house exchanges their natural gas furnace, and for instance, for this system, it's going to be almost like being on what we used to call an all-electric house, which also at one time had an incentive rate, a lower rate. I don't know if we still do that, but is that kind of what you're angling for here? Is this where you're heading with this discussion?
Mr. Donnelly?
Chairman, Representative, I guess my comment was made just to the fact that I believe a cost-justified geothermal rate would be justified through the Public Utilities Commission. Then you can let the public decide if they want to use natural gas or electricity to heat or cool your business. Geothermal systems are extremely efficient. It's not electric resistance heating that we're talking about here, but a geothermal heating system, which is at least three to four times more efficient than electric resistance heating. So it's not electric heating that we're talking about here, but a geothermal heat system, where the majority of the heat is pulled out of the ground, essentially, and not created. Geothermal systems move energy rather than create energy, and that's the key to their efficiency. We use the natural ground heat to pull the heat out of the ground into the building for heating, and likewise in summer we pull the heat out of the building into the ground. And it's the idea of moving energy rather than creating energy that we strive for in our efficiencies.
Representative Galen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scalzi and Mr. Donnelly, this Friday I was actually at Rush City High School in my district, and their heating plant is a geothermal heat pump system, and I had the opportunity to look at it really closely, and it's impressive. And then I talked to the business manager for the district, and you could see the bottom line. They have a little bit of natural gas auxiliary for a couple weeks ago when it was really cold, but it was it was cold enough to not be able to walk a couple blocks between two buildings on Friday, and you couldn't feel it in the building. It was a really impressive system, and the pumps, Representative Gunther and Beard, that there were two pumps about this big that were firing the whole system, and it was. I'd encourage Rush City High School to be part of, you know, an example. They've installed this in 1993, and their custodian is pretty amazed that why is everybody coming around looking at this now? This is 13 or 14 years old. So I think it's about time we see what the ramifications and the bottom line is for the state to do this.
Should I comment to that?
I guess the question actually is it an
if you wish, Donnelly.
system? Do you know any about the Rush City system?
That is around before I started EconR, so I'm not familiar with the Rush City. I do know it's a geothermal system. We have installed several systems in Minnesota for schools, churches, and businesses, homes. But again, we're a very small industry, and those that have installed our systems often wonder why more people don't install our systems. And I think that's the barriers that the bill addresses. Why aren't people looking at this more seriously? And that's why I would encourage you to move this bill forward to overcome those barriers and make suggestions as to where, how to let the industry develop on its own eventually. But if you want to develop the industry quicker, there has to be some incentive to move that industry forward. We will grow. There's no doubt about it. But consumer awareness is the height of the issue here. We need to have more people aware of what these systems can do and let the consumer decide, is that something they want to install and invest in?
Representative Bly.
Chair Hilty and Testifier, I want to commend you. I've been an admirer of geothermal as a heating option for a while, even checked into it for my own home, but didn't quite work in that setting. I taught in the Milan, Minnesota area, and it was very close to Appleton, and I commend you for your economic development in the area of Appleton, too. That's great. I don't really have a question, I want to encourage you and say that I really support this, and I think you're absolutely right. I think we ought to make sure that more people know about the option for geothermal and what a savings to our total energy system it could be as well. So thank you for testifying.
Okay. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to say that we have three elementary schools in Fergus Falls where I live, and at least two of them were built back in the 30s, and they've all been retrofitted with geothermal heating, so they're older buildings, but up to date as far as their technology for heating and cooling. My question for Mr. Donnelly. You said this is a small industry. How many manufacturers are there in a state like yours? Are you the only one?
In the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Donnelly.
Yes.
Chairman, Representative, there is one manufacturer, and that is EconR in the state of Minnesota. There is one in South Dakota, and there's one in Illinois, one in Florida, and one in Oklahoma. Those would be the major manufacturers. So there's a handful of manufacturers in the U.S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other follow-up question to Representative Scalzi. Looking through the bill here and the, seven items I think listed there, or six, is number four really the primary reason for this? I know cost is a huge factor. That's why many single-family homes can't really justify. The payback is there, but it's long. Or other factors, maybe the well isn't accessible if you live, places where you can't drill a well. That's part of the deterrent. But is the financial portion of this bill really the heart of the whole matter?
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I think you're right there. Other than the barriers that we have to increase our business in the state, but the cost, there's a great upfront cost. And Xcel Energy gives a $350 rebate, which is very small compared to the upfront cost of installing a geothermal system. And you can retrofit, and the next testifier has done a retrofit. And I think that what we need to do is to identify what these costs are and look at what some of the other states around us. I understand that the other states around us do offer rebates for installation of these systems, because as it takes more, it releases more power available to the other people in the state if some are using these systems and using less energy. And I think that what we have to look at is conservation. We're looking at many new energy types, but if we can conserve of our existing energy use and produce an economic benefit to the state, we're way ahead. It's a win-win situation. But you're right, Representative Gunther. It's very costly up front, and the study would identify some of those costs and how they can be retrieved as the system ages.
Members, Representative Scalzi reminds us we do have another testifier. If you have questions that can wait until the testimony is complete, such as questions for the author or comments in general, I would appreciate if you could hold them and allow us to hear from the other testifier. But if there's a question specific to this witness, then go ahead, Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a question for Mr. Donnelly. Regarding the technology of the closed-loop systems, which are they all closed-loop now? At one point in time when geothermal started, I realized that they weren't all a closed-loop. Has the technology changed, and is that the standard within the industry at this point?
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you. Chairman, Representative. Yes, most of our systems are closed-loop systems, and that means we're installing a polyethylene pipe in the ground, heat exchanger in the ground, and circulating a water solution through that freeze-protected water solution, and pulling heat out of the ground, bringing it into that water, and then with pumps, bring that water into the building and then use that as the heat source for the building. And that is, most of our systems are installed that way. If you have a farm or a large acreage and a well, let's say, you can set up a geothermal system and a well, use water well, basically, and pull water into your geothermal heat pump, and that's the heat source, and dump that to the surface, and that's been done. Initially, that's how most geothermal systems were installed 20, 15 years ago, let's say, but now we've evolved to more closed systems rather than these open loop or well water applications.
Representative Palin, do you...
I think it's appropriate at this point, Mr. Chair. Representative Nornes's question about the payback and the incentive, and I can't remember if Mr. Donnelly or Representative Scalzi raised the issue of the rebate, the Xcel rebate. And one of the things I think we'll deal with this more when we get to more comprehensive, either House File 789 or a couple of other conservation efficiency bills, is that really the conservation is happening on the gas side. And yet, and through SIP, we're dealing with gas and electric so separately. And yet, here we actually have a real conservation across the fuel source. So I think it's one of the things that just sort of reminding us all to talk about this a little more openly as we look to improving SIP and really making it work even better. That here's the limit is in the way the program is set up now. And I think there's a way that we can work together to try to figure this out. To make the payback period work and not overstretch the incentive too much.
No further questions for this witness. Representative Scalzi, would you like to have your other witness come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as he's walking down, this is John Wayne Barker, who's the Executive Director of Merrick Incorporated. We'll tell you a little bit about how a nonprofit can increase their efficiency and serve more people by energy savings.
Chairman Hilty, representatives, I'm John Wayne Barker. I'm the executive director of Merrick Inc. We are a nonprofit 501c3 corporation that's licensed by the state as a day training and habilitation provider, which simply means we provide vocational opportunities to adults with developmental disabilities. Right now we serve about 325 people up in Badness Heights. I'm here today just to give you a recent real application of this system. We purchased a 52,000 square foot cinder block building in Badness Heights in 2001 that was heated and cooled with the typical rooftop gas units. And we chose to consider and eventually install a geothermal system. The benefits of that to us were almost immediate. You can remember that after 2001 we started seeing some huge increases in natural gas pricing that we benefited from having gone to the geothermal system. Excuse me. While I'm the executive director of Merrick, I know what I am also not, and I am not a researcher or an analyst, but I did go on the website or the internet today and just do a quick search for electricity averages or average use nationally in commercial buildings. And there seems to be somewhat of a dearth of information out there, because what I came up with was from the Energy Information Administration, which is an agency of the U.S. government, and the data they're reporting is 1995, so it's a bit dated, but apparently the most current that we have. And what they're reporting as a cost for the national cost for office buildings is $1.34 per square foot. And right now, Merrick is operating in 2006 at 79 cents per square foot. So even if we simply adjust that 1995 rate by 20%, and I'm sure energy costs have exceeded 20%, but just using 20% as an average, that gets us up to $1.60 per square foot, and we're operating at 50% of that. You can certainly begin to see the value to us as a nonprofit or as any type of business to be able to heat and cool our building at 50 cents or 50% of the national average. Before opening up to questions, I think it's worthwhile for this bill to advance the knowledge in this area. There is a limit of knowledge as far as recent data and costs, what are best practices, what are some buying criteria or things to consider when evaluating this type of heating system opposed to a natural gas system. And as a business, you look to objective data for those kinds of decisions, and there just isn't a great deal out there. You can certainly find data from one of the different vendors out there, Conair being one of them. Still, if you're going to calculate your return on investment, it would be helpful to have some data out there that you could rely on to generate your decision there. It's been a good decision for us. Our return on investment has already been satisfied quicker than we anticipated. We thought it was going to be 7 years, and it'll be less than 4 years for our ROI to be accomplished. And we now hope to, within the next 5 to 10 years, connect a solar array to our building that would power our geothermal system and take us off the grid. So I'll open up to any questions.
Any questions from members? Very impressive story, Mr. Barker. I don't know that there's anything further to say about that. Representative Welty, Mr. Barker, maybe a question for you?
No, not a question for Mr. Barker.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman Hilton. Representative Welty, I just have one quick question for you. On the back, the date that you want the report to come to you is no later than March 15th. And just as a technical question here, do you want that possibly to be moved up to sometime in January to give you time to implement legislation if, out of number 7, you have recommendations for legislative action? Because I could see that this might get delayed and be put off, and you may not get your report till March 15th, and that by that time it will probably be too late for you to move any legislation.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Welty. I think that's an excellent suggestion. I wasn't sure how quickly this would move through the committee process, and I think that's why we settled on the date of March. But I would accept a friendly amendment to change that to January 15th so that we would have time for any legislation next session.
Representative Welty.
Well, Chairman Hilty, I will move that we change to amend House File 393 by line 2.8, deleting March and inserting January.
Representative Welty moves. On line 2.8, the date again, Representative Welty.
Chairman Hilty, I move to delete March and insert January.
Any discussion to that amendment? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Representative, Mr. Chairman. Representative Welty and Representative Scalzi, one quick question that I have is, as we're diving deep into SIP and looking at the capacity of especially the State Energy Office and the Department of Commerce, I'm just curious, and I think that perhaps we could look for some guidance from, I believe we're laying the bill over for possible inclusion, is that correct? Perhaps we could just look for some to staff at the department for some guidance about their capacity to get this done by that date. And your point is really well taken, and it's important that we can act on it if we can, but I don't want to overburden them with something that they can't do and then sort of defeats the whole, and then sort of falls by the wayside. I don't know if you've spoken with them, Representative Scalzi.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I have spoken to the Executive Director of the Public Utilities Commission, who is here with us today, and if we have any questions, we could ask him. The intent was to have the reliability administrator conduct the study, and we've had that person in the Public Utilities Committee for a number of years. Their position will sunset in August, and that's why we need the amendment, because that position will no longer be there, and they don't intend to continue that position. But what they would do, as I understand it, and please come up and correct me if I'm wrong, is the Public Utilities Commission can collect the money needed for a study. So that would be a question, too, whether or not this would have to go to finance if the Public Utilities Commission collects the money, and then it would be the Department of Commerce who would either, as the amendment says, either conduct it or contract with an outside party to conduct. So I don't know if that answers your question as far as being overworked in that Department of Commerce in that particular department.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I trust that we'll work this out, I won't oppose the amendment. I just wanted to raise it to make sure that the technical assistance part of the State Energy Office and the department as well, we want to make sure that they can handle these things, and I'm happy to engage in that discussion a little bit just to confirm that we'll get the results we want when we can actually make good use of them.
Representative Kalin, relatively confident that we'll hear from the department on this. Representative Osmond.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, I was wondering if we are going to hear from the department so we can find out where is the money coming from, who's paying for it, what that sort of, as well as the time money. I think that those are appropriate answers. And if we have someone here who can speak to that, I think good to know before we even vote on this amendment.
Mr. Hart, would you like to comment on the amendment and the bill in general?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Earl Haar, I'm the Executive Secretary for the Public Utilities Commission. I hesitate to speak on behalf of the department exactly, but I can address the Representative Osmond's question about where the money comes from. As Representative Scalzi mentioned, the authority to assess, to collect the funds comes under the Reliability Administrator, which is part of the Commission's budget right now. It's a special fund. However, that fund is going to sunset in June of this year, but there's a provision of it that will continue on into 2008, and that provision allows the Commission to collect funds for $500,000 for the Department of Administration for project it has. The commission basically is the assessment authority for that. We do the assessment with the utilities, and we transfer the funds to Department of Administration for their projects, for their program. And as I understand it, the plan is, with the amended language that I've seen, the money for this project, for this study, would come out of that authority. That's my understanding.
Regarding the date of moving this up from March to January, do you have any idea what the impact of that would be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, with the amended language, Department of Commerce would be responsible for that. I would rather they respond to that question.
Okay. Is there anyone from the Department of Commerce here who would care to comment at this point? Representative Osmond, we'll make sure that we talk with them as this goes forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We do have the Welty amendment before us. Representative Welty.
Chairman Hilty, at this point I'll withdraw my amendment, knowing that this will be discussed, and if it's going to be laid over for possible inclusion in the energy bill, then that date can be looked at. But to Representative Scalzi, if it can be moved up, I would suggest that it be moved up to January 15th if that doesn't cause any inconvenience for the reliability administrator, for the fact that it'll give you time to draft legislation in response to this. Otherwise, you may be waiting another year or two before you get to that.
And Representative Scalzi, we do have your amendment, which we have not acted on. Did you want to address that at this point?
Thank you, Chair Hilty. Most of the amendment deals with exactly what Executive Secretary Haar mentioned, is that the reliability administrator position will sunset.
That's the A1 amendment that's in your packet, members.
So we just changed the language somewhat to include that. And then we did add one other section on line 1.6. We talk about both newly constructed and retrofitted. We didn't want the study to simply talk about newly constructed buildings because we think there may be great potential for the state in retrofitting buildings that are now heated by fossil fuel systems.
Are there any questions, any discussion to the amendment? If not, the chair will move adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion to the bill? Well, the bill will be laid over, Representative Scalzi, for possible inclusion in the energy, in the omnibus energy finance bill. And I'm sure we'll be consulting as this goes forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate your time.
Next on the agenda, House File 532, Representative Winkler. Representative Winkler, welcome to the committee. The chair will move that House File 532 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Please explain your bill.
I would appreciate your vote for the House File 532, which is the Minnesota Service Members Supplemental Act. Basically, this bill does three things for members of the armed forces who are posted overseas. It gives them the protection of the cold weather rule, essentially, which I guess is why we're here. It also allows them to cancel cell phone contracts without penalty if they are not able to use the phone. And it allows them to cancel without penalty various rental and service type contracts. So, for example, internet service providers or travel club membership or health club membership, things like that. The basic idea behind the bill
is that if you're called to active duty overseas, you shouldn't be forced to pay for things that you can't enjoy and add an additional financial stress on your personal finances or your family finances. There is a federal Service Members Civil Relief Act, but it covers things like home mortgages, rent, credit card interest rates, and things that are important to many service members, but this bill extends those protections a little bit further. And it particularly goes and to the benefit of younger service members who tend to have more of the rental or service type membership contracts, cell phones, etc. So the idea is to really extend the benefits of the Federal Act to a number of other areas and to make sure that they're not asked to serve their countries in a way that are completely unbeneficial to anybody. Many companies already provide these types of services. Quest, I know, for example, in their wireless service allows service members to do this. So this is not something that is, I don't think, unduly burdensome for utilities or for wireless contract providers. It's simply a protection that many of them provide already, and it makes sure that, or ensures that service members, when they are going to be posted overseas, know their rights, know that they have this right to cancel, and so they don't have to spend their time making phone calls to cell phone companies and utility providers, but can instead spend time with family and friends and wrapping up other more crucial details in their lives. And with me is Captain Brian Bergson, who actually now is employed by the Attorney General's Office, but served in Iraq in the first Gulf War, and has had some personal experience with this type of protection, and is just going to share a brief few words.
Mr. Bergson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, I know some of you have already heard my my story, which is not really that enthralling, but it certainly illustrates the fact that the
Mr. Bergson.
Oh, excuse me, Brian Bergson from Attorney General Laurie Swanson's office.
Thank you.
It certainly illustrates that the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act, as it was called then, does work. I was living in an apartment on the Mississippi River called Riverwalk Apartments. I received my orders on a Friday afternoon to be activated, and I was to report to Fort Hood, Texas on Monday. I had volunteered and had no idea, quite frankly, if and when I would even be called up, but I found out on a Friday and had to be out of my apartment on Monday and to Texas by Monday. I immediately went into the rental office, and they told me, well, you can't get out of your lease. You've signed the lease. And I got a little panicky, so I called up my unit. My unit told me to call the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I did. And literally within about a half an hour after I called the U.S. Attorney's Office, the maintenance man, who was a member of the 1st Cav in Vietnam, and that was the unit of which I was going to, was in my apartment helping me pack and getting me on my way to Fort Hood. Businesses and companies, I think, want to do the right thing. Sometimes they just don't know what the rules and the laws are. And that's why the Attorney General this last month set up a Veterans Assistance Office within our office to handle questions and calls like this, because we do get them. And this bill is just a good common sense extension to some of the new contracts that weren't even around 10 years ago, or contracts that have just kind of come into place, digital television or satellite television contracts, for example, are things that you should not be paying when you're, you know, half a country away or half a world away serving your country. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion to the bill. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess for either one of you, is this something that would be better handled at a federal level? Is there federal, either existing or proposed legislation that would cover this?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the most recent incarnation of this act was in 2003. And to, as far as I know, I mean, ideally, yes, it would be covered at the federal level because then it would reach all service members. But given the fact that I'm not aware of any legislation being pending right now in Washington to extend this further, I think this is what, you know, it's our obligation to do that now. And at some future point, Washington wants to take care of the problem. I don't think we would stand in their way.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question. If Quest does this for their cell phone contracts, do we know of other Minnesota companies that are doing this for people already? I mean, is this legislation necessary? Are people, companies already doing this on their own?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, the answer to that question is difficult to know, just how, to what extent Minnesota companies are doing this. I know many of the major cell phone providers do this. However, the part of the package of information that is provided, to example, to the Minnesota National Guard members includes phone numbers, rights, and various types of relief that they can access as a matter of law. And this would then be included in part of that information. And the idea really is to make sure that service members know what their right is rather than having to guess or maybe even operate as though they didn't, such a thing doesn't happen. And it doesn't leave it quite as much to the discretion or at all, frankly, to the discretion of a particular company or a particular situation. It just clarifies it and removes an obstacle to enjoying this right.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Chair will renew his motion that House File 532 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Hackford, Energy City.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House File 86, bring the bill before us, and I'm not sure what your recommendation might be, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like to move the bill on or hold it over for possible consideration in the omnibus bill. What are your thoughts on that?
I believe, Representative Hackbarth, that the Committee on Local Government has asked to see the bill.
Very good. That would be my motion then, Mr. Chairman, that I would recommend it pass and be re-referred to local government. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're short on time, so with that, I'm going to introduce my testifiers, and they can explain why the bill is here. The folks, the citizens of the City of Elk River brought me this legislation, along with the Mayor of Elk River, the Honorable Stephanie Klintzing, former state representative.
Thank you very much, Representative Hackbarth. That's very true. I am a former state representative seated here in these chairs at one time. And, in fact, you just had another one address you who was in the same freshman class as myself, and that was Representative Bergson. So we are here in force today. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I am Stephanie Klintzing, Mayor of the City of Elk River, and we bring before you the request to designate the City of Elk River as Energy City, Minnesota. That really is the request. We have been Energy City actually in the city since 1995, and that is a designation that we received through a nonprofit organization who was looking for a city to partner with to do demonstrations to promote energy efficiency products and technology. Our website says we're Energy City. We have signs at the entrance of our city that say we are Energy City. We have an Energy City Commission that has been formally adopted and has been working now on Energy City issues for the last year. We have an entire economic development marketing strategy designed around our designation as Energy City. And we also have gone for federal designation to protect the name Energy City, and we've received that. So we are federally protected. Energy City is federally protected for the City of Elk River. So we've done all that, and we've been very, very busy, and we'll go into a few of the projects that we've had going on that are very important projects to the energy efficiency and conservation issues. So why do we come here to you to ask for a state designation as Energy City, Minnesota? We looked at where we were as a commission, and I sit on the commission also, about 6 months ago, and we said, is it enough that we simply designated ourselves as Energy City? Basically, that's really where we are right now. Is it enough? And is it really going to take us to where we really believe we need to be in the entire debate and discussion of energy efficiency and conservation? And we decided it wasn't enough. We can do these things on a local level. we can do them as best the city of Elk River can do to promote the things that we are doing, and we'll explain some of those things to you in just a minute. But really, if we wanted to expand and widen the influence that we have on the energy issues discussions, we needed to have a higher platform, if you might, to be able to do that. And we felt that expanding this to be a statewide project that would give the state a place of focus for energy demonstrations of energy efficiency and conservation products and technology, that it would be a good place to go. This is not a gimmick for the city of Elk River. We are not asking to be the Halloween capital of Minnesota or Spud City. This is a very serious thing that we have undertaken for the last, how many years? Almost 20 years. And it is, it's a very important thing for us to be looking at the opportunity to widen the effect of it, widen the influence, and to allow the state of Minnesota the opportunity to use us, to partner with us, to advance the issues of energy efficiency and conservation. So I'm and also very proud that Econair, who has also testified for one of the bills previously, their corporate offices are in the city of Elk River. I'm very proud that they're there. They belong there. They are on the cutting edge of energy efficiency and conservation, and they fit right in with us. I have with me today Steve Rolfe, who is a former member, city staff member of the city of Elk River. He was a department head. Currently, he sits as a member of the Energy City Commission. Steve was instrumental in the things that we have been doing as Energy City in the city since 1995. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve and I'll let him just give you some indication of some of the most exciting things that we're doing around this issue in the city of Elk River.
Mr. Rolfe, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Stephen Rolfe. I'm an Energy City Commissioner with the Elk River Energy City. First of all, did you all get a chance to read that bill in its entirety? I can't be that brief, but not a lot needs to be said as far as the language. But I can't emphasize enough how important energy issues are. As far as I'm concerned, it's the number one environmental issue we're facing. I think it's also the number one economic issue we're facing. And that's really what Energy City is about, is finding solutions to environmental problems that make economic sense. When you apply for grant money, the buzzword is sustainable, and I've seen a lot of interesting energy grants be given out to try this or that. They seem to end when the grant money ends. What Energy City is about is finding, again, solutions that may also make economic sense. I went to a seminar a number of years ago, and Dennis Weaver, or you might know him as Chester, was the speaker. And in his Chester kind of way, he said something that was very profound. I always remembered it. He said that if we don't do something to improve our environment, we're all going to die. But if we wreck our economy doing it, we're all going to die. And it makes a lot of sense. To be sustainable, solutions to this number one environmental problem, energy, the production and consumption of energy is the number one environmental issue we're facing. We also have to have it make economic sense. And what Energy City does, it combines government, environmental groups, and industry, and allows those groups to get together to help find these solutions. We have a lot of things already in Elk River. I think that's why we were picked as Energy City. We have landfill gas to energy. We are landfill gas. They take the methane and use it to produce electricity. Econair's a member of Energy City, the geothermal heat pumps. There's a number of reasons why we were picked. And what Energy City does, it aids these demonstrations with technical advice, monitoring, publicity, and we also are about education. But what we're not about is money. We're not asking this group for any money. We're asking you for the aid of designating us as Energy City so that we can get the word out about this. It gives us a credibility that we're seeking.
We'll stand for questions.
Thank you. Representative Newth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also thank you to our testifiers for the work you do in your city. And we've already gotten into some discussion about what are we talking about energy, are we talking about global warming, are we talking about environment issues, and you brought up that energy is one of our biggest environmental issues. And I was wondering if your city has discussed or signed on to the mayor's climate protection agreement, basically.
I haven't done that yet. We haven't had the opportunity to discuss that. Global warming is the focus of our upcoming energy issue that is happening in the city of Elk River on April 21st, and you're all invited to come. We're starting with global warming. Paul Douglas is coming to talk to us about global warming as a community. What we're doing then, though, is we're taking that issue of global warming and we're putting it down into the homes. And we're saying we have all kinds of workshops and information to the public on how can you affect this huge issue of global warming. But we do those sorts of things because we are very much interested in doing something that can actually have somebody that's on the local level, somebody in their homes, tying into this, buying into this, getting them to understand how they can be a player in it. But yes, that is something that we're discussing, but we haven't done that quite yet. But yes, we are very interested in those and very involved in those more global issues.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for either of the presenters. I compliment you for your work, and I'm very interested in it. I would be very interested in learning more, but I'm very reluctant to give any one city exclusive right to a title when we're in a time when the energy issue is so critical for our entire state. And only now, hearing about what you're doing and not making it an open, competitive process, I personally would find it difficult to give you exclusive right to that title, because if there are other locations that might currently come up to a standard that you're establishing, that could be discussed. But I don't feel that this process that we have had the opportunity to make that sort of judgment, and it would be a judgment that I personally would take with the utmost caution and seriousness, precisely because I believe everything you say about energy needs to be embraced by every portion of our state right now because of its critical nature.
Mr. Rowe. I dare say there aren't any other cities in the state that are as focused on energy as Elk River is. We've actually made an actual city commission, an energy city commission, like a planning commission or a park commission. There's an energy city commission in Elk River. We've been taking this issue seriously for over a dozen years now. I don't know that you haven't beaten down your door to get this designation, but we've been calling ourselves Energy City for 12 years, and a number of critical demonstrations have been done in Elk River. The landfill gas energy electricity demonstration that I referred to, that got the Environmental Protection Agency's Project of the Year in 1997, I believe it was, or 98, one of the two. We've got gold medal winners for Energy House 1, 2, and 3 with the Home Builders Association, their national convention. We've got name doesn't mean anything now because they changed the name, but we've got one of the largest wind generators in the state. Even though we're at the low end of the commercial wind resource, it was put into Elk River. What Elk River acts as, and the importance of the Energy City designation, is to identify Elk River as a geographical focal point for demonstrating energy efficient and renewable energy technologies, services, and products. The designation spells out what we are. It helps us get that word out. So I don't know that it's a competition among cities. This is not a win-lose thing. What it is giving us the designation, it'll help us get that word out. You'll be doing a lot for the environment.
Right. And also, of course, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Helping the state of Minnesota also, and that's really why we're here. So Energy City does not come without cost to the city of Elk River. We support the commission. We support the work of the commission. It costs us thousands and thousands of dollars a year to do energy city projects and promotions. Also, obviously, I've already stated that the federal We've protected federally the name Energy City. Now, obviously, you could have an Energy City, Minnesota, that would be not the name that we protected. We can't protect such a name because it has the state of Minnesota in it. What we're asking for is an opportunity to widen and to expand the base of our influence. And if we are given, if we are given an opportunity for a state group to come and look at whether or not the city of Elk River has earned this designation, we certainly have no problem to believe that we would. We come by the energy issues very honestly. The city of Elk River was the site of the first atomic rural, or the first rural atomic electrical plant that was dismantled, I believe, in the 1960s. We are also the corporate headquarters of United Power Association, which is now Great River Energy. We also are the home to the RDF plant, which was first started by NSP. We bring all of our garbage into the RDF plant. It is processed into RDF, and then it is burned at the Great River Energy's site and made into electricity. As was stated before, we have one of the largest landfills in the state of Minnesota. Almost all of the garbage from this area, the surrounding area outside of the Twin Cities, goes into Elk River. We have been able to capture the methane gas that comes from that large facility and use it to for electricity for heating houses. So I can't even imagine another city that would be able to put the kind of money that we put into this and also would be able to catch up to anywhere near what the city of Elk River has done already. I think we deserve this. I think we have earned it. I think we've really put in the things that we felt were necessary to bring these issues to the forefront. So I guess as the mayor of the city of Elk River, I would defend our position from that place.
Representative Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I in no way want to challenge anything you're saying about the quality of the work, the amount of work, the, you know, everything you've done. My only hesitancy is in trying to take an objective position on a title that says the, what does it say here? It says the state energy city. We just haven't had any context for it except you're putting forth what your city is doing. I'd be interested in what an organization like the League of Minnesota Cities might say, you know, and whether there are any other cities. There may be nobody who would contest that, but I'm not comfortable just taking testimony from you about the value of what you're doing in the context of the entire state. Clearly it's a value, but whether it warrants that exclusive title, I'm not comfortable deciding on the basis of that limited testimony, which in no way undermines anything you're saying about the history or value of what you're doing. And others may have comments about that. I don't know.
Representative Brenner, I think that probably the League of Minnesota Cities will weigh in on this if the bill advances to the local government committee. I would assume that that would be the case. Representative Norness.
No, passed.
Then Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the same concerns that Representative Brinert has raised. And missing for me in the bill is the definition of what state energy city means. And coming to us, I think it's a great idea. In fact, one of the things that we've talked about as we look at the conservation and efficiency effort in Minnesota and seeing that it's the next wave of economic development. And I think, I'm sorry we won't be hearing Representative Broad's bill about jobs, the extension for the kind of sustainable green development that's going to happen. And I know you all have built on, and I'm working with my cities to do such a thing, to target that investment. And to that point, I think I'd like to offer an amendment that I think can improve the bill and can actually help challenge other cities to rise to Elk River's example. And that is line 1.6, it's 2, 4, 6, the ninth word. Replace the word the with a state energy city.
Representative Hackbarth?
That we would be one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think I'd oppose that amendment. If you look at the statutes 1.14 and all the different designations of you know, the state fish, the state gemstone, the state drink, all of that, it's not a, it's the. And I think we're making more out of this bill than it really is. And I would oppose the amendment, Mr. Chairman. I think the concerns that we're talking about can be addressed in local government committee.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My comment's real simple. You never have another energy city until you have the energy city. So if we're hoping to get a second one, you'll never get that one until after we get the first.
And Representative Gardner, we have the amendment before us.
I will pass until we get to the amendment there, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion on the Kalin amendment? If not, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The amendment does not prevail. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I've been to virtually all of the demonstration sites in Elk River in my work in the solid waste field. And I'm really impressed with the outreach that the city does with schools. They've also worked to get the local high school, I think it was, to be a green building. If someone else wants to come forth and be the biofuels city of Minnesota or the wind power capital, I mean, let's have at it. Let's have every city ought to have something. So I'm all for Elk River being the energy city. So you go for it.
Further discussion, Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty. And Representative Hackbarth, I just have one question. You referenced this. This is under the same section of law as our state gemstone. And so I'm just wondering, do we have any other city designated as a specific city for a specific reason in that section, Representative Hackbarth?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Welty, no.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Appreciate it.
Representative Gunther, did you have further comment? Representative Hackbarth, would you like to renew your motion?
I would renew my motion, Mr. Chairman, that the bill be recommended and passed and be re-referred to the Committee on Local Government.
Representative Hackbarth renews his motion that the bill read that House File 86 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion does prevail.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Members, on Wednesday we will be hearing from the Department of Commerce on their budget initiatives, and I had told Representative Broad, to whom I apologize for not being able to get to her bill today, that we will try to do that after the Commerce presentation on Wednesday. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.